The InStyleOwen podcast is brought to you by Cybionics, an emerging CGM brand that focuses on simplifying how individuals aged 18 and above monitor and control their blood sugar levels. Upon becoming available on the market, the Cybionics GS1 CGM has helped users worldwide navigate the complexities of diabetes management with more confidence and peace of mind. Thanks to Cybionics, now more people are able to view and share their real-time glucose data, receive customizable glucose alarms, and generate full AGP reports, all directly from an intuitive Cybionics app, empowering them with the necessary information to make better decisions about their health. Cybionics combines data accuracy and comfort of wear, which is important to us all, with a feature-rich app. The 14-day scanning-free and calibration-free Cybionics GS1 CGM aims to deliver reliable, seamless diabetes management experiences. For more, check out cybionicscgm.com. This is the InStyleOwen podcast, where I, Owen Costello, try to redefine diabetes. In this week's episode,
I was doing fingerprint tests from 1999 until 2017. Like, that's a really long period of time to be just doing the same way of monitoring blood glucose levels and nothing changing. And then you're talking about within the next 6 years, everything's changed.
But before we get into that, everything you hear on the InStyleOwen podcast is from my own personal experience. And if you have any worries or issues regarding your diabetes, please contact a medical professional. Now, let's get stuck into this episode. Hello and welcome back to the InStyleOwen podcast. I hope you're well. I apologize if that was very loud in your ear. Whenever I start a new podcast, I seem to just shout very loudly. Anyway, I hope the week and day are both treating you well so far. And the episode that we have for you today is, as always, an amazing episode. And the guest that we have is Mr. Chris Bright, who has been a guest on this podcast before, which we discovered and realized the last time that he was on this podcast was actually 4 years ago in 2020, which is insane that the podcast has even been going that long. But Chris is an unbelievable guy. He's been living with type 1 diabetes since 1999. He was diagnosed at the age of 8. And Chris is an honorary fellow at the Worcester University. He is the founder of the diabetes football community. He plays for his national team in futsal. He is so passionate about diabetes management and so passionate around helping other people improve their health with the condition. And there were a number of different things we wanted to speak about in this episode specifically, but something that we just kind of kept going deeper and deeper and deeper on was the new system of management or tech that Chris has been using, which is the hybrid closed loop system that he has. I think he's had it now for about 6 months, and the impact and the benefit that that has had on his life, which is fascinating. And myself and Chris compare how management is nowadays compared to how management was back in 99 or even 2012 when I was diagnosed. And it's a fascinating episode. The physical side of diabetes, the mental side of diabetes, the emotional side of diabetes, you're going to love it. So I'm going to stop talking. My dog has just started barking right on cue. So enjoy the episode. I will chat to you soon. Okay, Chris, we have decided just to press record because we were getting deep into experiences in New York and obviously the views of the skylines and the experiences that we've had, but this isn't a travel podcast yet. So how are you, Chris? Good to have you back. You've just informed me that the last episode we did was 2020, which is 4 years ago, which is insane. I know we've been in touch, obviously, but how have the last 4 years been for you since we did the last episode?
No, well, thank you for having me back on. And yeah, 4 years on, in terms of my sporting prowess, unfortunately, it only goes one way with four extra additional years in the legs. So yeah, I'm moving in the wrong direction in that sense. But hopefully, with some of the other bits and pieces I've been up to in the last few years. There's been some great stuff going on from the diabetes football community's perspective. Some work that I've been doing and the job that I've moved into at JDRF in the United Kingdom. And equally, just trying to involve myself more in trying to influence and provide support for people with type 1 and get more knowledge and awareness out there. And obviously, as you know, and with a real special interest about sport and exercise and physical activity, really at the heart of a lot of what I'm trying to do.
Absolutely. I think you're very well known now as the diabetic football king, I'd imagine, around the world, because everything you do is so centered around sport. And even from my perspective, like, it's massively beneficial even to see what you're up to, because as a type 1 diabetic, you understand and appreciate how difficult it can be to actually manage blood sugar, specifically around exercise and around different types of exercise and how it can vary, obviously. So one of the big things, Chris, that I noticed what you did recently, you were speaking on Sky Sports or Sky News. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, and that came a little bit out of nowhere, really, from my perspective, but not out of nowhere for why it happened and why that news had hit mainstream media, if you like, in the UK. So, yeah, I was asked to do an interview on Sky News, which was around the rollout of hybrid closed loop from the NHS. So the National Health Service in England had announced that they are going to put significant funding into a five-year rollout of hybrid closed loop for every person with type 1 diabetes, which is what I believe is one of the world's first, if not the world's first, kind of national approach to getting hybrid closed loop to people with type 1 diabetes. So, yeah, I was asked to go on to Sky News alongside Professor Parker Carr, who's been a leading figure in the community from a healthcare professional perspective, known across the globe for his work and effort in advocacy and getting more tech and into people with type 1 diabetes, and also just generally being a really good guy and big support for people with the condition. So we were on there together, and I was there to give an update on lived experience and what it's like to have hybrid closed loop, and provide that, I guess, the personal touch to what is obviously talked about in the news a lot from a scientific perspective and the impact that it has on glucose levels and policy and how it helps with, long-term gain around the kind of healthcare profession and obviously reducing complications, impact on type 1 diabetes long-term. I was there to tell the story of what it does right now and in people's lives at this moment and bring it home, I think. So, yeah, had that opportunity, and yeah, whirlwind. I woke up on Tuesday morning to the news of what was happening with the NHS, and on that same day, I ended up with doing a radio interview for a local BBC, and then with the TV interview later that evening. And yeah, just a great opportunity to get out there what hybrid closed loop is like.
Amazing. So, for anybody who doesn't know what a closed loop system is currently, how would you describe it, Chris?
I think if I was to give it like sort of simple terms, it's the continuous glucose monitor. So our Dexcoms, our Freestyle Libras, whatever sensor we're using, where it's speaking to the insulin pump. So in my case, I wear an Omnipod. So I'm on the Omnipod 5 hybrid closed loop system. So they're constantly in touch with each other. They are communicating. And in communicating, what they're doing is making constant adjustments to my glucose levels. So the sensor is telling the pump that I'm, for example, maybe 10, 11. And as a result, it's saying, well, it's 10 or 11. I need you to bring that down because his target glucose is 6, say. So insulin pump, can you put a little bit more effort into bringing it down because he's high? And I need to bring it back down into range, into the level that we're focused on hitting. So that's what the insulin pump is constantly doing with the sensor. It's making those adjustments continually. It doesn't do that without any input. So it's not a completely closed system where I don't do anything. That's what it's called hybrid, because it requires some input from the user. Or I'd say more than some, but it just requires effort from the person that's wearing it. So I have to put boluses in there still. So for meals, I'll say I got to count up my carbs and input in that. When I go and do physical activity or exercise, I need to tell it that I'm doing activity and exercise, so it eases off the general basal insulin, which exists, the background insulin. So I have to input information into it to make it work better. But overall, it does so much more automation and corrections than I could ever do by sticking a needle in my leg and doing it on, you know, I don't know how many auto corrections it does, but we're talking where I might have done 7, 8 maybe across a day, and being busy with my, you know, doing a lot of them to try and make my levels sit in range. It probably does, I don't know, 100, 200 a day, real small, tiny adjustments, but it's doing it and you don't even know it's happening. So it just takes away the continual thinking. It's like more time in range for so much less effort, and it's more time to think on other things and less time on type one. So I get to spend more time in my brain doing what I want it to do and less time focusing on the condition which I never signed up for as an 8-year-old. So it's that. It's not a cure. It's not how, it's not artificial. It's not an artificial pancreas, which is often a media term sort of leveled at it and given to it, which makes it sound like it's kind of, you put it on and it's a cure, artificial pancreas, because you just think, oh, it's an organ stuck on you. That fixes the problem. It's not that, but we're getting a lot closer with this to what I would perceive one day being, you know, a technological cure where you wear something which does everything all of the time and it makes it so you don't ever have to think about it. And then maybe one day we even get to like what I perceive as a full cure, which is nothing. That's it. Done one day and you never think about it again. So it's exciting. It really is exciting.
So on average, we make an additional 180, 320 decisions as a type 1 diabetic throughout the day on any given day. How many do you feel you make now? Like, what sort of impact has this had? Because you say you obviously think about it less. How many decisions do you reckon you make now compared to a year ago?
There is some sort of stat floating around how many decisions it thinks it's kind of taken away or reducing. I reckon I'm halving the amount that I was making before. I do just most of the time not have to think too much. The best thing about it, and the one where it takes away probably the most, I guess, and talking from my own experience, hearing it quite a lot, the bedtime situation, going to sleep at night with type 1 diabetes, that is where it had the greatest impact I could have imagined. I sleep now like I slept as a 7-year-old before type 1 diabetes entered my world. In the last 6 months that I've been on it, I can count probably maybe 2, 3 occasions where I've been awake in the night because of type 1 diabetes. Before that, if you were to measure the previous 6 months, I reckon I was awake. And it was because I was, the main reason which drove me, I was finding things a little bit tougher overnight, things which my levels weren't as good as they had been. And it drove me to really want to try this and get onto it and push for it. And in the previous 6 months, I reckon it was 2 to 3 times a week I was probably needing to wake up to do some sort of adjustment where I wasn't quite right. I was going low because of training, or I'd eaten later in the day because routines had changed for me, and therefore overnight it was very difficult to get a good gauge of what my levels were before I went to bed. So my levels were going a bit higher. So now I don't worry about any of it. And that's the thing I couldn't stress more about how good this is because at night, at 10 o'clock at night, when I'm trying to wind down, I don't think about, I might have had a little snack or something like that, little bolus for it, done. And no thought into type 1 diabetes before bed, just go to bed. That's probably the term for it, is you just go to bed.
It's wild to even try and comprehend that type of process in terms of not having to think about it. Because I suppose the way I look at it, even my own management, like I'm confident of my management and I know like what to do, what not to do, these types of things. But knowing what not to do and what to do still requires thinking, and sometimes requires more thinking than maybe you want at any given point. And that has been my scenario for 12 plus years. So it's almost difficult to comprehend not thinking about it. And I was actually having a conversation with somebody yesterday about like freeing up that mental space, because I almost look at diabetes usually like a conceptual sort of way for the most part. But if we go through different stages of management of like a time where we're really struggling compared to a time where we're really confident, generally there's a different amount of mental space taken up. So obviously it's kind of like a spectrum of how much mental space your diabetes takes up, but it's almost difficult to comprehend not thinking about it, which is an amazing thing, but it just shows the advancements that there has been with management. So when you, and I know you kind of referenced your seven-year-old self, Chris, before you were diagnosed, when you think back to 1999, when you were diagnosed, and what your management was like then, how does it compare to how it is now? I know, obviously, you were a child, different context, different circumstance, but what comes to mind for you when you try and compare the two?
They're worlds apart. Mm. They are so far apart in every aspect. There's good bits that from 1999, which I think it's that piece around like ignorance is bliss. Like you not being so connected to technology, you're able to live a bit more. You're able to think less about it. And I think that's probably was a really good teaching for me early on, is kind of trying to focus on life and focus on other things, not just being tapped into type one. And it comes at your own comeuppance sometimes, because there you would, you know, not give enough effort to it, and therefore you might have a really bad hypo when you're on finger pricks that you would never. I don't have really bad hypos now because of the technology which is there to catch me and help me and support me. So there's the element about the thinking, and I think sometimes we see a lot of that maybe in the community now, where people are so connected into their data, it's stressful. And I didn't live so much with that stress. I was more with the actual stress of, this is, you know, my levels don't play ball when I want to do the thing that I'm trying to do and enjoy. And that's because I don't have the tools. The tools weren't there. I've now got the best tools to manage type one there is prior to there being an actual like cure where we don't have to do anything. I'm at a place now where all we're going to do and see from here is it going to get even better. We're going to get removed. We're going to get further from hybrid closed loop. We're going to get closer to closed loop. We're probably then going to be talking about cures, which we thought, oh, 5 to 10 years, they'll be here. You know, this theme of people saying, oh, they promise it in 5 years, they promise it in 10 years, but we're going to see it actually being spoken about, I think, and we're starting to believe it. So it's I think it's the difference is huge between the times. There's some great stuff about how I the teachings it gave me about life and trying to incorporate type one around life as a kid and just going for it, and then type one just sort of came with it, which actually people now I find are finding that tough because of being so tapped into it with the technology all the time. So anyone diagnosed now in this sphere of technology which is out there is finding that hard, because you're surrounded by type one beeping at you constantly and always on your phone, and we're always on our phone as it is, so you can't switch out of that. So I like aspects of that, but actually when it comes to giving me freedom, that it's what it, I think the best way to sum it up is it's given me freedom to live life with at no detriment to my type 1 diabetes. My type 1 diabetes has the same management now with me doing less. It's like me focusing on it over here for hours and mental capacity, but it's doing that. The technology is doing that. It's almost putting the same effort in I was doing, and it's taking it all away. Like, it's taken not all of it away, but taken lots of it away from the thinking that I need to do to give me freedom to just go and do everything else that I want to do. And I have to wear technology to do it, but you can start to envisage a world where this is like, this might not be here, or this is going to have far less of an impact in my world and others' worlds in the Type 1 community in 10 years' time. Mm. I think in 10 years' time, and it's going to depend where you live in the world, of course. You know, I'm blessed that I live in the United Kingdom, where we've got the National Health Service. We're a country that's not short of money in general, overall, to be able to provide funding and to deliver something like this in comparison to other countries across the globe. So we're going to see many of those developed countries have access to this in the next 5 to 10 years. And our worlds of Type 1 look very different. But the disparity between other countries in the world is going to be probably getting even larger because of that. But overall, it's going to kick everything on. We're going to see developments for Type 1, which are just, life-changing technology. Mm.
You touched on a couple of different things there that I was almost tempted to kind of interrupt you, because you made a few different points. And the first one was how when somebody is diagnosed today, as opposed to 10 years, 15 years ago, like even when I was diagnosed, the technology, as amazing as it is, and this is something that we even go through a lot, it can create almost further stress and anxiety around it. Because like you said yourself, Chris, it can be constantly beeping at you, constantly ringing at you. And when you can look at your blood sugar as conveniently as you can look at your Instagram, you're more inclined to be reminded of your blood sugar. You're more inclined to check it more. You're more inclined to think about it more. You're more inclined to be reminded of it. I think I probably said that twice, but you know the point I'm making. And I think that in itself, it's an interesting balance, because on one side, we say to ourselves, well, the technology is unbelievable, and physically it makes my life so much easier, essentially. And then the other side of it's like, well, much like you've said yourself, ignorance is bliss to a certain extent. And when I'm constantly reminded of highs, lows, sensors, blood sugar, etc., that can create further mental stress and anxiety. And even what I have noticed, I'd say maybe the last 3 years, more so than previously, and that's obviously as a result of more people using this type of tech, not closed loop necessarily, but sensors and these types of things, I have noticed that mental aspect of burnout seems more common or more prominent because of, well, I've just so much more convenient access to my diabetes on a daily basis. And again, when I say a balance, it's like, well, yes, the physical side has improved so much because it's easier to keep my blood sugar in a healthy range, and then the mental side of it. And something that I think is really important for people, and if anybody's even listening to this now, that is inclined to check their blood sugar too much, or they're somebody who stresses about it a lot, try and have what I call like pit stops throughout the day that you consciously check your blood sugar. Like, don't habitually check your blood sugar as often as you check the time, or as often as you check your WhatsApp or your Instagram, because every pit stop, I like to call them, is an opportunity for your blood sugar to annoy you if you're somebody who's like emotionally connected to your blood sugar more than you want.
100%. And if you look at, and this is, I think, where it comes from, where learning to live with type 1 prior to all of this technology comes in, because you could only tap in and tap out to type 1 diabetes in moments. I finger prick tested in the morning. I ate breakfast. Next time I check my levels is the next most convenient time, which is what exactly you're describing, which is a pit stop. You almost structure into the day when you're going to check your levels, which is what you used to do when you were fingerprint testing. You would do it at lunchtime then to get a reading ready for what you needed to dose at lunch. And then you would then, the next time you do it, fingerprint before dinner. You go hours of the day without knowing what your blood sugar reading was. And you went a little bit more in the feel. And I would just be like, oh, I'm not going to do it. I can't. I'm not checking my levels now. I'm just going to have a glucose habit. I feel like I might be getting a little bit of a hypo coming on. You're just in tune with your body. And I went, right, okay, two or three of them, job done, carry on. I'll see you at dinner, diabetes. And you just, and it was, it's a slightly healthier way, which then when you try and bring tech into that world, when you've been trained to think like that and do that for 16, 17 years, when you bring tech in, it means that I really don't look at it that often. Like, I look at it and I don't obsess over it. I don't look at it too often. And I forget about it for long periods of time because that's how for 17 years of my life, I didn't know what was going on for long periods of time. And I'm trained in that way of being around my condition in formative years as well, right? So I was diagnosed at 8, almost 9. You're growing in from a young person, a child, to a teenager to a young adult, into being, if you like, fully grown adult, all of that on fingerprint testing. So all of your learning, all of your growing up, you've just been taking on that way of behaving with type 1 diabetes, which then I think now translating into my view of it's quite, at times relatively healthy. There'll be other things I probably had fear around hypos in at night, which I think is probably why sometimes my levels I'd run a tiny bit higher in the overnight. But then it gives me better perspective maybe during the day. None of us are perfect in the way we approach it, but I've had that kind of healthy, balanced way which was developed through fingerprint testing, which is not afforded to people now because people go straight onto tech and you are tapped into type 1 diabetes for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you haven't been given a manual on what behavior is like for checking blood glucose levels. And nobody said to you, what is a healthy way of checking your blood glucose levels? They've just said, this is how to.
Yeah, 100%. It's, again, an interesting one because personally, I look at, because I've experienced both, in terms of I spent my first kind of 9 years just finger pricking. So I had that unique experience of really being able to be in tune with my body around how do highs feel? How do lows feel? When are the most productive times for me to actually check my blood sugar? And then I've also had the flip side of it currently where I'm lucky enough to have a sensor and I get alarms, highs, lows, et cetera, et cetera. I come at it from a place of, I absolutely prefer having a sensor, 100%, there's no comparison. But I know people who are more stressed out by sensors. And I think that comes down to, again, the unique aspect of diabetes in itself. Yes, it's the same condition, but who we are as a person, who we are as an individual, how we feel about certain things will obviously impact how we feel about our own management. So it's there's no right or wrong answer. It's purely just what's the best for you.
Yeah, I don't think any of us really know what the best way is, but it's certainly we've gone from extremes very quickly, and that's we've gone from no tech to sensor to now something that does all sensing and insulin pump automated in such a short space of time. Most people were getting onto sensors, I say like 2016 onwards, 2017, 2018, and you're talking about 5 years later, 6 years later, people are on systems which are talking. And before that, I'm talking about 17 years where nothing changed other than the type of insulin I used, which is not a nothing changes, but from a technological standpoint around being tapped into type 1 and glucose monitoring, I was doing fingerprint tests from 1999 until 2017. Like that's a really long period of time to be just doing the same way of monitoring blood glucose levels and nothing changing. And then you're talking about within the next 6 years, so like the quarter of 25% added on of that, or a third added onto that, everything's changed. And I've gone from fingerprint testing and injections to now a system which talks to itself, within 6 years. So the speed of change has meant like how we behave with technology hasn't been considered because we've just been like, let's speed up the technology introduction because of how amazing it is for outcomes, long-term outcomes. And it is, it's incredible. And there's no doubt in any of that. But the relationships we have as human beings with the technology, that's something we have thought about, but we're almost like it's coming afterwards. It's an afterthought to it. And then that's why we're seeing so many people finding challenge with it being so connected, and the stresses and the pressures of it and the data always being there and feeling like you're being graded on the data. You know, you walk into your healthcare professionals and they already know what your levels are because they've been tapped into your levels for 6 months. Don't worry, there's no hiding place when you walk into that room because they can decipher what's going on because they've got your levels now. My levels are hooked up to a clinic that's half an hour that way and also another clinic sort of 2 hours that way. So
no hiding.
People can see, there's no hiding, and that provides stress. You feel like you're being graded and monitored on something, which when I was young, when I didn't feel like it and I didn't really want to talk about it, I used to pretend what the levels were in the book that I went in. I used to write 6.7, and I don't know if it was 6.7. I just made it look good for the doctor and the nurse. And I wasn't the only one that did that. And it was, and they're not daft either, but they would have seen on my HbA1c that, Chris, you can't be getting these sixes and sevens and your HbA1c is 65 or 70 or whatever it was, you know, as a young kid. So yeah, we're in a really interesting age of tech and the impact that it's having on us, amazing as it is. And I'm completely the same as you. I wouldn't go back. This is incredible where we are. But there's a lot of thought that also needs to go alongside that on the impact that it has on us, which is not just about those diabetes outcomes. What about the whole human being involved in just adopting technology? It's like how we've adopted social media in our lives. We didn't really think about that. We just rolled it out. You know, and social media's come in, and the impact that it has is great on one hand, but we've seen lots of negatives with it. You can liken it a little bit to that with how quickly social media rolled out across the world in different platforms and uses. Diabetes technology is headlong in already in our lives, and there's other things to consider around just the diabetes outcomes in its adoption. And we'll get there, and it will get there. I wouldn't want to take it back and get rid of it, but there's lots of stuff to consider with it.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the fact that you're lying in the books, writing different readings. I remember I was speaking to somebody who, similar position to yourself, was diagnosed X amount of years ago, and which I also was too. Like, I used to go to those appointments having to write them in the book. But I remember specifically speaking to somebody, and they were telling me that when they were a child, they used to know my diabetes appointment is coming up, and I didn't write any of my numbers in the book. I didn't record anything. So what they used to do was they used to get the book and use different pencils and pens and different colors, so it looked like they were recording numbers over an extended period of time, as opposed to just banging them all in one day before the appointment, which is funny.
And exactly the same. Did exactly that process. knew the appointment was coming up, hadn't written in it for weeks, went back, needed to just fill it in and put some stuff in there. So change pens, change. We're all using the same tactics.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to, there's a reason why people did that. They did, you know, you feel a certain way when you go into those appointments. You feel like someone's going to ask you questions and you're being monitored and you're being graded. In those days, you could sidestep it a little bit by fictional reading, if you like, in books. Now there's no place to hide, and you can understand why that's increasing stresses and pressures on people.
Yeah. It's an interesting one too, though, because it's almost as if the continued advancements with the technology is almost, I kind of look at it as if it's almost kind of giving us an ability to bypass that element of frequent stress or anxiety around it. And what I mean by that is the tech that a lot of us use now, like certain types of sensors, pumps, etc., much like we talked about, they can be that kind of constant reminder of, you know, I need to do this, I need to do this, or am I high or am I low? Which, as we've spoken about, Chris, essentially is a good thing. But it's almost as if the continued advancements with the tech, and particularly the kind of system that you're on now, because it takes out so many of those decisions, and because it's so advanced, and because it speaks to, well, they speak to one another, there's less reminders, there's less beeping, there's less highs, there's less lows. So it's almost, again, just to repeat what I'm saying, because it's advancing so much, it's giving us an ability to almost avoid the type of stress that we might be feeling currently.
Yeah, and that was one of the greatest, the biggest motivating factors for me, was that it was going to take away some of those decisions, give me more freedom for less effort. And that's where we're in this limbo. I think a lot of people are in that limbo place where it still requires a lot of effort to get their levels into a place they're happy with. And they're more tapped into their levels because of the sensors, but they require so much more work to get them there, which is creating some of the stress. Whereas this next step up of hybrid closed loop is going to do a lot of those stress and take some of those stresses, because it's going to do the correct thing for you. It's going to constantly be monitoring and constantly adjusting, where you might be doing that manually at the moment because of the way that you're monitoring levels and you can see them all the time. Whereas this, the next step up from, let's call it, say, continuous glucose monitoring and multiple daily injections, or even insulin pump, not talking to CGM at the moment, but when you that space requires quite a lot of manual intervention, and you're tapped into the knowledge of what insulin's on board and what glucose levels are constantly, with you almost needing to do the work of the algorithm, which is in the hybrid closed loop. You're like being that mathematician, making it all happen in the middle, where with your injection and your continuous glucose monitor. Whereas in the hybrid closed loop, the mathematician is in there with you. You've got like that he's in the system, or she's in the system, working stuff out for you, making those adjustments, and you just sit back and kind of let some of those decisions and stuff happen, and take it's just taken away from you, and it frees you up to enjoy more of life, really, and just focus on other things, and have a few less decisions to make per day with type one.
Which would be nice for all of us, I feel.
That was part one of this episode. If you are listening to this on the day of the release, part two will be out tomorrow. But if you're listening on any other day, part two is the next episode on our list.